Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric Hallgren, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, and we have finally arrived here. Although, Ken, it doesn't feel like UFC 196, even though we're at the hotly anticipated rematch at UFC 202 between Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor.
Oh, Nick Diaz already working his way into the...
Right, yes.
We'll talk about that later when I talk about the insane Tyrone Woodley decision that was made by the UFC last week.
You were really fired up, but you love that decision. You bought a t-shirt, tickets to the event.
Oh, don't get me started yet. So wait, are we really here? Is it this weekend?
It is this weekend. Although, like, I was listening to Sean Alshadi from MMA Fighting yesterday on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, and... I don't disagree with him. It feels like there has been far too much fighting in July and August that, like, this doesn't have the fire that I expected it to.
Yeah, especially with these two guys at this point, because when you tell me it's this weekend, and I know we're doing the show early this week, it doesn't feel like it's fight week. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's a lot of the talk over the past couple weeks, whether it's John Jones pops up in the news, whether or not it's Tyrone Woodley coming off his win and his championship win. So we've got a lot of things to kind of digest and move through. You would think that they'd want to give this a little more breathing room, and I agree 100%. We talked about July being a month that it was going to be hard to be an MMA fan. It was going to be tough to kind of catch everything. It's like the NFL would stack a bunch of their playoff games into a single day, and that happens a lot, and then roll the Super Bowl in, you know, the next day.
Right.
That's kind of how it felt over the past couple of weeks. And it's a very interesting dynamic for MMA fans because basically we're built for one big event a month at this point. Let's remember back in the day, we were looking at four or five a year at most. So basically at this point, we're built for one big event a year. And we had these weird couple of weeks where we had obviously UFC Fight Week, which led to 200. We had 201 just a couple of weeks later. And then we've got 202, one of the hotly anticipated rematches that we've seen in a long time with the most talked about fighter in the UFC happening right now. And yeah, it doesn't feel like we're there yet, but I think we're going to be pretty excited by the time we get to Saturday.
Oh, I certainly think it will get there. But when you compare last time to this time, right? Short notice, mm-hmm. off of a tequila boat to fight Conor McGregor, the crazy press conferences that they did. There was just this eddy of insanity that you just couldn't get enough of it. And now it's, you know, you've got, like you said, there's a million things going on. They're launching a CM Punk documentary this week.
They sold the company three weeks ago, is their first official thing.
And so there's all of this stuff swirling around. And I just think that when you ask yourself, and I believe, Ken, if people were to go back 3 years and listen to the show, you were the Nostradamus of this, saying, like, look, you're going to reach a limit to the amount of fighting that we can consume. And mm-hmm. I feel that July into August, we have found that limit.
We found that limit, and we found it with what were some pretty good matchups, too, where you think you would find this would be like, okay, we got lulls in this event or lulls in this event. You know, seeing Lawler defend his title and Tyrone Woodley take that win, that is an amazing thing to see. Seeing what happened at UFC 200 and all the drama around it, that was kind of, no matter what you think of what ended up happening afterwards, as some people want to say for discussion points you probably added to it, that was an amazing thing to see.
Sure.
To see what happened to RDA in his fight just a couple days before that, to see the women's division, to now see Conor Diaz 2, to see all these things happen, you wouldn't have thought, hey, if we're going to reach a point of fatigue, it's going to be some of these lesser fights. It's going to be a headlining fight where you're like, well, I'm not so sure about it. I don't know if we say that about any of these fights, just happening over and over and over again. And it's interesting because you consume and you consume and you consume. And again, the NFL is able to put a game out there every week, but they don't do it all year long, which is what the UFC does. So it's a very interesting dynamic here to kind of see them promote this and still have to. This is an interesting thing, too, because we talked about this, and I think this is a little bit of an after effect of what's going to happen. Two things. You're going to have UFC Fight Week, where we're eating up a ton of fighters, literally and figuratively after the event, considering the drug tests that happened
and the positive tests.
So we went through a ton of fighters there, knowing we were going to have another event just a couple weeks later. So what you're seeing is that is happening. And you're also seeing the fact that the UFC's got to make their next matchups. There's no reason other than maybe trying to get Tyron Woodley on the card for 203 or 204 to make the announcement that he's going to fight. There's no reason to do that before 202. Again, I don't question a lot of what Dana White does. Dude usually knows what he's talking about. But I have to wonder where he's coming from on a couple different angles there. And we'll get more into this in a couple minutes. But why even bother talking about that fight that you haven't made, which we know because there's no bout agreement, before you get to McGregor and Diaz? And I get it. The guy's out in front of the press a lot. Sometimes you say things. Sometimes you're asked questions about things. But that seems like something you wait to talk about until after this. And again, if you're a super consumer and you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a super consumer of the product. That's fine. And you'll follow every little bit of it. But for a casual observer, they're trying to kind of keep up with it. For that ESPN fan, which is really who they need, and I guarantee, which is who they're pressured to get now that they've got a new owner that needs to get a return on $4 billion. Now let's not forget that the company's been worth that for a long time. This company's been worth billions of dollars, but when it goes back to the Fertittas paid $2 million for this company. That's all they needed their return on.
Right.
Everything else was gravy. At this point, there's no gravy.
And
bowl is dry.
And I'll even add to that, if you're listening to this and screaming at your car or your phone or whatever, yes, I understand that the rumors were they invested $200 million to get the thing where it needed to be.
Of course.
Okay, fine. So even if it's $202 million and they made $4 billion, they're still in the good, guys.
Yeah, they're very high in the black.
Yes.
As financial analysts would say, I'm sure.
As Dave Ramsey would say.
So what you've got here is you've got
a envelope system worked out really great for
you've got a very interesting system here where you've got to figure out what's going on as far as your promotion and getting ahead of it and getting the most bang for your buck. The worst thing anybody can do in a business like UFC or really any business is have something of value, but not get that value in return, not get that bang for the buck. Whatever you're doing, you need to get that return on investment. And if you've got a great match like Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz, you want to get that return on investment. This should be your second biggest pay-per-view of the year behind UFC 200. Doesn't necessarily feel like that right now.
No, and to add to that, right, the other giant event this year is MSG in November, which, you know, as we're looking ahead, and we won't do this too much today, but as you're looking ahead, I'm hoping that also doesn't get overshadowed by a gluttony of events towards the end of the year or the return of Ronda Rousey if she doesn't return to the MSG card or whatever. It just doesn't feel like we get any chance to breathe, even when we get weeks off. Like last week was essentially a week off. There was a Bellator, but not much else going on. You just don't have a chance to wrap yourself around that. That said, it's UFC 202, and we get this rematch. And the line is really tight right now, with Conor at minus 125, Nate at minus 115. Your feeling on the lines?
I don't know where these lines should be at this point.
Well, what do you feel about the fight? Because that would, I mean,
I if you look back at that fight, and I had a chance to kind of rewatch some of it a couple weeks ago. I look back at that fight. Other than Conor talking after the fight, there's nothing that tells you he's going to win this fight. There's nothing that tells you. If you look at the fight objectively, Eric, there's nothing that tells you he's going to be able to win this fight. He did nothing in that fight. Nothing in that fight that makes you think he's going to win this fight. Now, he's got more time to prepare. He knows the guy's strength. What was it? His efficiency in punches, he said, wasn't where it needed to be.
Yes.
Which to me sounded like code for, wow, I hit him really hard, but he's a lot bigger than all these other dudes I fought, and it didn't really affect him as much, and he's a bigger guy, and he hit me hard.
Well, and to put that into actual fight metrics, Diaz landed 77, McGregor landed 61 punches in that fight.
Mm-hmm. But it didn't feel like it was even that close. It really doesn't if you look at that fight.
Oh, you think the first round isn't competitive?
I think it's competitive, but for what Conor McGregor's talking about is going in there, and while he knows all his tricks, he knows what he's going to do. He's trained now for him. Look at the fight objectively and take away everything Conor McGregor says and look at that fight. And if you show that fight, somebody walks in the room randomly right now. Hey, let's pull this fight up. We don't put any audio on. Hey, those guys are going to fight again. Somebody would go, why? That guy just whooped his ass. Why are they fighting again? Why are they fighting again? Just got his ass whipped.
Because it was awesome, that's why?
Yeah, I guess so. But what was awesome about it wasn't the fight. What was awesome was the backstory, was the drama. The things that Conor McGregor, and he gets credit for them, brings to the table in these fights. That's why it was awesome. It was awesome that Conor stepped up and fought a guy that much bigger than him. It was awesome that Conor McGregor saved this event and kept this event from being canceled. All those things were amazing. But again, somebody walks in the room right now. I turn on this monitor. I play that fight. I tell them afterwards, hey, yeah, they're going to rematch. Why? Why are they going to rematch? We know why, because it's Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz. But if you look at that fight, there's nothing in that fight that tells you a rematch is even deserved and tells you that Conor is going to be able to win another fight. Now, that all being said, we do have to take into consideration all the outside things that we know and the other things we know about Nate Diaz. And we talked about this with the first fight. We said, you know, we gave him a bit more than a puncher's chance maybe in the first fight. We had bought in a little bit more on that Conor McGregor hype, myself more than I probably thought I would have. Now, we said, if you go back to that podcast before 196, Nate's two different guys in a lot of fights. We saw the fight against Conor, where he didn't train,
right,
and he didn't have to cut weight and didn't have to do anything. He looked great. We've seen Nate Diaz go in there and look lackadaisical before. We've seen Nate Diaz take bad losses before. We've seen that happen as well. So if you get that Nate Diaz, maybe you get a guy who's cashed in a lot of checks and he's feeling good right now and he doesn't feel like he has to work that hard, you could see a different fight. I'm not saying that's the Nate we're going to see, but it's certainly something you have to take into account, especially since after the last event, and we didn't see Nate for a while, Dana White thought he might have just fallen off the planet. Well, I gave him so much money, he might have just disappeared. We might never see that dude again. Well, he's making more than he made last time, so maybe he's just going to cash in and move on out. So it'll be interesting to see, because he's taken those losses before, but he definitely in this fight didn't look like he was ever going to lose to Conor McGregor, rematch or no.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, I certainly, obviously, the facts are the facts, Ken. But I mean, his losses, when you go back to 2012, to Josh Thompson, Benson mm-hmm. Henderson, and RDA, mm-hmm. like, if we're using our favorite thing on this, and I know some people hate this about the show and other people love this about the show, if you use MMA math, I'm pretty confident that Conor beats all three of those dudes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure too. I mean,
I guess what I'm coming away with, and
I don't know if I'm buying into the RDA as much, maybe more just because RDA took that loss, but I mean, we've got to see what he's going to do against a heavier guy at this point, because, and again, it was a big jump, and again, credit to him. I don't want anybody to listen to this podcast and think, oh man, they're not giving Conor any credit.
Well, I'm all in on this.
All the credit in the world goes to Conor McGregor for taking that fight, but that was a much heavier opponent. Now, would 10 pounds matter that much? I don't know. Because he'd be going from 45 to 55 for RDA, right? So I don't know if that makes as big a difference. Obviously, that jump to 170 is huge, and we saw that was huge for him
in
that fight.
Well, I mean, you've heard Nate talking. You're actually fighting a 200-pounder.
Right?
You're not fighting a 170, or even as big a jump as that is actually another 30 pounds on top of that.
See, and a little bit of the luster maybe that's been taken off of this fight coming up is everything else going on. I really haven't watched any of these pressers, and I know he's talked a lot about like WWE wrestlers, and he's made some statements that are kind of interesting there that have gotten a little bit of pub, which is exactly what dude's trying to do. I haven't seen a lot of them next to each other because I mentioned this before. He was so much smaller than Nate in that fight, and nobody thinks of Nate as a big guy.
Right.
Nate's never been seen as a big guy in that division, and when he was fighting against Conor McGregor, you're like, whoa, okay, Conor's not that big. Like, he's a great fighter at his weight division, but he's not that big. So there's a lot of things to take into account here. One of the very interesting things is, if he loses to Nate Diaz again, Dana said no matter what happens, he's going to fight for the belt. He's going to fight to unify or interim. I don't know how they're going to bill it. Champion versus champion, I'm sure, is how they're going to do it.
But
that's how it's going to be, right?
Yes.
That's why they hand out all the belts, so they can do all these champion versus champion fights. So he's going back to 145 after this fight, win or lose. How does that look in the division if it's lose?
Well, and that's what we said going into the first one. Okay, he loses, and then he loses to, like, this was the, we're talking a lot of business today. Like, all things being equal, he loses to Nate, he loses to RDA, and then what? You really want to see him at 145? I don't really know, because he lost in those two divisions. If he loses to Nate twice, I still think he can mop up 145. What does it do to him mentally? I don't know. But there's nobody at 145 that I don't think he can't manhandle.
I think he'll be fine. And you can replay probably one of the 196 podcasts because you were much more worried about this in the first fight. And I said he doesn't lose a thing after the first fight. I don't think he loses much more, but I certainly think it's going to be very interesting for him basically going off of two losses back to his division to take on Jose Aldo. And that's a rematch, though, because so once we talk a lot about the puzzle pieces, where do things land? Well, Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo, the guy he beat in 13 seconds, is kind of a really interesting dynamic to see how that goes in this next fight. So marketability is always going to be there for a guy like Conor McGregor, but you got to kind of wonder, is he going to take a hit? Because it felt like he wanted to get back. This fight felt much more at home at 200. This really did.
Yep.
It felt like it could have been knocked out. You could have taken care of it. You've got the other champs on the undercard. The fact that it's taking so long puts that spotlight on it a little more as far as, oh, did you take the loss? Oh, you know, Jose Aldo's the champ now. No, I'm still the champ. Oh, you really haven't fought in a long time. That's how it all kind of is playing out.
Yep.
Now that it's not on 200, it all goes back to that flight he didn't want to take. So it's kind of interesting to see how that one thing has really knocked all these other dominoes down and led us to this weekend.
And what else is interesting about this card is that here we are in 2016 in August talking about Donald Cerrone at 170 also being a thing as he takes on Rick Story, which I think is just a really, much like the Conor going up to fight Nate, the fact that Cerrone has somehow been able to make hay at 170 and become a thing, I think is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Just fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, we look down this card and kind of see what's going on there. That Cerrone's always a guy that's been willing to fight. And to give that credit to Conor McGregor earlier, you got to give the credit to Donald Cerrone. He's always been a guy that's up for the fight. And he's been proving it in the last couple fights. He's been doing pretty well. I mean, he took that loss to RDA, obviously, I think end of last year. And otherwise, I mean, he hadn't really lost in a couple of years at that point. I think it was probably RDA again, wasn't it, earlier that he lost to RDA? He lost to RDA twice because that was a big rematch. I remember the promotion of that fight. So it's been a while since he's taken a loss against anybody but RDA. Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
Yep, it was both RDAs.
Yeah, so Anthony Pettis is his last loss other than RDA. That was 2013. So, I mean, you can't really put anything by this guy at this point. And you never know what's going to happen down there on the card and see what happens with Donald Cerrone.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I find fascinating about this is he makes his debut at 170 in February and beats Alex Oliveira. And you're like, okay, fine, you beat Alex Oliveira. Then he smashes Cote in the third round in June.
Yeah, he grabs bonuses for both of those.
You know, and back at it in August to fight again another really tough guy in Rick Story. And if he wins this, he's three in a row at 170. And now you're like, okay, what are we doing with this division? Because if Conor beats Nate, I think now we're building a trilogy. And
you think that'll happen again at some point?
I don't know, but I don't think. I think you handle that one separately. That doesn't necessarily, it's not indicative of a title shot at 170, because that would be insane.
For Nate?
No. For Conor.
No, Conor doesn't get a title shot even if he beats Nate. But if Nate beats Conor, he's beat one of the best quote-unquote fighters on the planet
fourth in the pound for pound, so sure. So,
twice now in that division. Boy, if we want to make, are we going to make 170 messier? Is that what we're going to do?
It's already pretty messy, but what I'm saying is, just to say out loud, guys, like, I don't think Conor, if he beats Nate this weekend, should be in discussion for some title shot at 170, because he would get destroyed.
What I'm saying is, yeah, but
these two fights are not the same thing. If Cerrone beats Rick Story, now we're talking about a dude who's established himself at 170.
Yeah, but he's still not in a title hunt, is he?
I didn't say that. I just said these are different.
Well, what are we talking about?
I don't even know.
Trying to figure it out.
Why are we here? My point being, two guys that went up to this division are having very different outcomes, even if both of them win.
Yeah, but I think Cerrone's not making as big a jump. And again, I think that big ass jump from 145 to 170 is a lot more difficult than 155 to 170. I mean, it's just math. I'm not breaking any like scientific ground here. It's just 10 more pounds means the other guy's bigger to start and he's got less to cut. And he's always been an amazing fighter. I mean, he's only lost to the champ in the last 4 years. years. So I think guys like that, you know, they can do some of these moves and do some of these things. And to see what Donald Cerrone does at 170 is going to be really interesting, especially as we kind of segue into what might be happening in that division in a couple minutes.
The co-main event, Anthony Rumble Johnson taking on Glover Teixeira. Anthony has said this week, which I find interesting, he spent most of the week talking about how he's never fighting John Jones ever.
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to fight John Jones now.
Ever. So I don't know what happens to Jones, who also came out this week and then quickly deleted it, that he hopes to be back soon. But I mean,
God, is there any, speaking of Twitty, every time we think John Jones does the stupidest thing John Jones could do, he does something like even dumber. And it's not, I'm not saying it's the worst decision he's made in his life. Clearly, we've got a couple other things.
Yeah, we've got
that, you know,
we've got some contenders.
Speaking of the summer games, we've got a gold, a silver, and a bronze in that category already. Everybody else is just happy to be there and waving as far as the John Jones bad decision competition goes. But this dude on Twitter and Instagram and wherever he is, and he just puts things up and he deletes them. He knows we see them and we save them. There's some dude somewhere, I don't know where he is, in Paducah somewhere. He's like,
screenshot. John just tweeted something. Screenshot. John just tweeted.
Why would he say he's going to be back soon? This would be very bothersome to me, considering the current UFC and USADA deal and the current drug testing parameters. I don't know if this was tainted or not, and I'm not doing this again. I don't care the reason at this point. It happened, and you've got to abide by the rules. Same thing with, I'm sorry that you don't have a wrestling job to go to like Brock Lesnar.
Right.
You probably could. Pick up the phone.
Right.
I mean, you know, if you're going to do...
Well, because they clearly have some sort of agreement, right? Because just, I know we'll talk about Phil Brooks in a little bit, but they certainly aren't stopping them from calling him CM Punk as we thought they might.
Well, he owns that name.
He does?
He owned that name before he went in. So that's why everybody's getting new names. That happens every couple of years for those of you who don't follow WWE. Like for a while, like a couple dudes will have, and as soon as somebody gets... like another job, then every like, nope, we're naming you. We're going to give you a new name.
Got it.
So he owns that name. So that's why he's able to do it. He veered away from that name when it was more associated, and I think it still is, but when he felt it was more associated with WWE briefly, and then he realized, oh, I got to try to sell some pay-per-views.
Oh, marketing. I should use the thing that I'm famous for.
So, hey, sometimes it's smart marketing to let a brand rest, too.
Sometimes it is, for sure. So the rest of this card, before we get into the rest of the news to talk about today, you've got Cody Garbrandt and Mizugaki. That'll be a fun fight. Garbrandt talking about how he thinks he should be fighting Dominic Cruz after this. I think he's a little bit delusional. The other one to pay attention to, there's some fun fights on this card with Neil Magny and Lorenz Larkin. I'm super excited to see that fight. And then this one, which is not necessarily a prelim to the McGregor-Diaz fight, but is people from both camps fighting each other as Artem Lobov from McGregor's camp fighting Chris Avila from Nate Diaz's camp. So that's kind of a fun fight to see, because if Avila wins, it's likely that Lobov will get bounced from the UFC. It's kind of a loser leaves town match, as Lobov has lost his first two in the UFC.
Well,
and I would say the three
winner get a Wikipedia entry, so I know what the hell these guys have done
perhaps
in the past.
That will be what will happen is that
nicely done on the research there,
yeah,
Eric,
is that you know, they will
Artem Lobov's mom is like, really? I didn't know that.
Joe Silva will write your Wikipedia page if you win this weekend, and then the other guy will get to go to wherever. So that breaks out at UFC 202. Like I said to start the show, not the fevered pitch that we thought it would be at this point. And I wonder, I wonder
if John Cena shows up as that
Mr. Olympian shows up.
If he shows up in the crowd, there you go.
Ugh.
There you go.
Here we go.
I love it.
I don't not love it. I think the more things
when does Conor fight Dolph Ziggler? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know. Okay, so let's talk about what.
Don't act like it wouldn't sell more.
You know that I'm all in on this crazy cross promotion. You know that I like Pride Never Dies.
We're getting closer to Japan every time we do one of these.
It's like my favorite thing ever, is that we're getting closer and closer to these two entities being one thing. And I know that there are people out there that are listening right now that are screaming and yelling.
Oh, Sean DeZay is in California right now, sunning himself, all pissed off. He's not here.
Celebrating his birthday right now, is super pissed that we're having this conversation. Howsoever, this makes it bigger if mm-hmm. you can do these things.
There you go.
I mean, look, a guy who was on WrestleMania is now going to be the president of the United States. It's the American dream, guys.
It's possible. They've both been on Raw, by the way.
Both of them have?
Yeah, yeah. Unless we go third party,
Yeah, that guy hasn't been
our sitting
much.
President is going to have been on Raw as we elect them. I think even Obama was there, too. So I mean, awesome. He already did that.
Okay, so a couple other things that came out this week. The first is I must have, perhaps because he got busted with the IV, the self-admitted IV thing with USADA. I thought the UFC liked BJ Penn. It's clear that they do not, as they have booked him against Ricardo Lamas as the headlining fight at UFC Manila, because I think that is a... like terribly.
Okay, if you got a headline of fight, though, you got to put a good fight up there, right?
Do you?
Yeah, I think so.
You have to sacrifice BJ Penn for the sake of Manila. That's what we need to do.
Are we expecting BJ Penn to be back? I mean, the guy's not going to be fighting for. We're ruining the next 15 years of his career. Dude's like one and done every time he fights at this point.
But this is why I have night sweats about him coming back or GSP coming back or any of that stuff, because this is
or Dan Henderson who is coming back.
Or Dan Henderson, which we'll get to. This is the stuff that keeps me up at night going, like, Ricardo Lamas and BJ Penn, and what do you think is going to happen with this fight?
He's a prodigy. I don't think he's worried about it.
Okay. Well, he should be very worried about it because, again, like I've said 1,000 times on the show, every time I hear his name, all I picture is that Nick Diaz fight where his corner can't throw the towel in fast enough because Nick has beat him nearly to death. I don't think Ricardo Lamas is going to do much less.
Manila's real close to Hawaii. They'll be fine.
This is a bad idea.
It's home field advantage.
And then as Ken said, we finally have an announcement as Michael Bisping will go against Dan Henderson on October 8th.
Interesting. That's official. I didn't actually know that was official.
It was
bouncing around.
UFC 204, which is turning out to be awesome. So you've got Bisping and Henderson 2. You've got Belfort and Musasi. You've got, who else is on this one?
What are we looking at? 204?
204.
204.
Hang on.
All right. I believe you.
I'm super. So you got Belfort and Musasi. You've got St. Preux and Jimmy Manoa. And then there's one other fight that's not coming up right now. There you go. Struve and Magomedov. And then you've got Brad Pickett and Alcantara.
Ruslan Magomedov.
Yes. 204 is, I think, going to be great.
Looks fun.
And what I like about it, as I've said this year, is the Bisping story is my favorite story in the last 5 years.
Well, and don't forget it's in Manchester, too, which is a big deal for a Bisping fight.
And so, I would love to see Bisping beat Henderson retire, Bisping have this moment, because it just kind of closes the gap on this entire story and continues to make this story one of my favorite things in MMA. So UFC 204.
You called me insane when I said this is the fight we should book.
No, I mean, I think it's insane, but we're doing it, so I have to be in on it.
Which makes it more interesting. I'm going to shift gears just slightly here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Are we done with 204, you think, for now?
Yes, for now.
So it's interesting because the UFC here took the fight that's the money fight. That's the fight that they can put on pay-per-view. That's the fight that can headline a card. And then this week, we also heard from Dana White in this past week that Tyrone Woodley will be defending against Wonderboy.
The one true king.
And
Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
Again, if you take a look at rankings, if you take a look at what's happened in the past
North
couple
remembers.
Of months, if you look at all of those things, no real problem with the fight. I've got a huge problem with the fight when you got a guy who's willing to unretire, who was your box office king right next to Anderson Silva for the better part of 5 years, willing to come back and fight your champion, and you can make a ton of money. GSP, we've seen the texts. GSP said he'd be more than honored to fight Tyron Woodley for the title. And if you're going to take GSP and bring him back, and I know you're scared to death of all... I don't want to say it this way, but I mean, you know...
But you're going to, so go ahead.
No, I was
going to
say Captain Save-A-Ho for old guys, but... Can I say it?
Yeah,
I just said it.
Yeah, why not?
So, yeah, you're like, every time an old guy wants to, I don't know, man, you should be careful. Are you in their wills? If you're in their wills, you probably want him fighting. I don't know what it is with you. But if GSP wants to come back, your most dominant champion at 170 pounds in the past 5 to 10 years, you don't walk him right into a title shot that money?
This is not one of the rare occasions that I'm going to agree with you, but lately it's one of the rare occasions that I will agree with you. This does two things that I think are great and why they should have gone with this. One, because as I said, I think the Wonderboy fight against Woodley is a very difficult fight for Woodley to win. That's not to say he can't win, but it's a difficult fight. And it would be a money fight, because I know you are on Facebook just totally dumping on it, saying it's going to be a Fox Sports 1 card.
I tell you, Woodley, Wonderboy will not be on pay-per-view.
Okay, I'm about to build this case for you. So you get Woodley and GSP. And Woodley hits harder than Hendricks. Let's say he finishes GSP in two rounds. You have built a superstar.
Mm-hmm. He's right there at the
last,
cusp.
Who is the last person to beat George St. Pierre?
Last person? I don't
know. Matt Serra, right?
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Caught
That's
him.
The last one who caught him.
I thought you were talking about the controversy around the Hendricks fights and Condit fights.
He didn't lose those.
No, he didn't lose those.
So, were they competitive? Could you go either way? Yeah, but the record is the record. The last person to beat him was Matt Serra. So, if Tyron Woodley beats GSP, so you have taken this guy, and Ken and I have watched Woodley all through Strikeforce, been super fired up of him, you know, from his mom screaming his name in the arena to coming into the UFC, excited for this guy to become a superstar. And the way that you build superstars, not to go back a minute to what we were talking about, but if you look at what the WWE does with people, the way you build superstars is by making matchups that turn them into superstars. Mm-hmm. If Woodley beats GSP, you have a superstar. And you've got a problem right now in the UFC, as we said 2 weeks ago. 8 of the 11 champions no longer have their belt. One
of those that started 2016 with their belt.
Yes. One of those guys won't go back to 145. So mm-hmm. you might as well have 9 of the 11 don't have their... You have two actual champions.
One of those guys is probably... Well, I shouldn't say he wasn't a champion at the beginning of 2016, but your other box office guy is suspended for the next 2 years if everybody follows policy in John Jones.
Oh, okay, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but he wasn't the champion.
Champion. But you can stack that on top of everything else.
Yeah, so you've got DJ, you've got Cormier, and you've got Jędrzejczyk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Tell me which one of those is a box office smash.
I think Cormier's a box office. He's steady. He's steady, and it depends on the opponent. It'll be interesting to see him because, I mean, we've got the Teixeira-Johnson match is default number one. See, we're running through a lot of these fights again because of John Jones blowing up that division by being a John Jones. So it's kind of interesting there. I don't know what a DC... Teixeira or DC Johnson would do again.
I mean, though he's fought both those guys.
That's what I mean.
Right? Like, who cares?
Like, it'll be in December or something, or maybe January. Like, oh, yeah, DC's fighting this weekend.
But the DC argument makes your case.
Mm-hmm.
They never, ever, ever got to turn DC into a star.
No.
And they tried to do it at 200, and it didn't work out.
Well, I mean, that was just a mess, and no blame there.
No, I'm not saying blame, but they were trying to do what I just said, is get him to Jones, get him to beat Jones. So, you know, all joking.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Silva mess.
No. I'm like, they wanted to put him together with Jones so that you could finally have this one true king conversation about 205. Look, guys, he did finally beat Jones. Let's just shut up. He's the champion.
Or Jones beats him, and we do it again.
Whatever, right? This is why the Woodley-GSP fight should have been the thing that they did.
Now, here's the interesting part. And again, the dynamics here are entirely different at this point. Dana White a lot of times says things off the cuff. And we know it's off the cuff because Tyron Woodley says, I don't have a bout agreement. I haven't signed anything. Nobody's told me about this. I heard about it in an interview. And again, for all the things that Dana White does well, there's some things where he should be a little more cognizant of what's happening. If you want a fight that is directly opposite of what your fighter said on television, you need to go talk to that guy. You don't need to make an announcement to the press. You don't need to go on TV. You know, nobody's got to pull their pants down and start measuring. That's what I feel like this is. Dana White went out there, oh, his next fight will be Wonder Boy. Why would he do that? Are you going to pay him a lot of money? Because you're probably not going to pay him the same you would have with GSP, who could bring in a ton of pay-per-view dollars. Or maybe even Nick Diaz, who's got a name and who's actually done pretty well considering he hasn't fought in like 2 years. I mean, he's a guy that could go in there, and there's been so much publicity around Nate. Nick gets to ride in on some of that. Nick gets to be the guy, yeah, I lost to who? GSP. But GSP's gone now, so I'm going to roll in here, and I'm going to take this fight. So you can't tell me that's not the wrong way to do that. I will disagree with Dana White going on TV or talking to news reporters or saying this is your next fight when you haven't talked to the dude about that fight yet. That just smacks of you being upset with what he said on TV. And there's certain instances where the athlete is going to react like that. That was 10 minutes after his fight. Who knows if he even felt like that? But you know what's going to happen now? Somebody's going to start to dig in. And then you're going to have another side dig in. And we're seeing this in the NFL right now. Joey Bosa is the first round pick for the San Diego Chargers. He's not in camp right now. They can't come to a deal because both sides have decided, I'm digging in. You can't afford, if you're the UFC right now, to have any of your champions try to dig in and start holding that belt up. That's why Dana White said Conor McGregor's got to go back to 145. You know, we've got new owners. We've got this company. We've got to run all these pay-per-views. We've got to have headliners. I feel like this was mishandled, and the way that Tyron Woodley's been willing to go public with text messages, with the fact that he doesn't have bout agreements, with all of these things that you don't traditionally see, tells me that you're dealing with a different kind of dude here, and a dude who's been fighting for a long time and never really cashed that check. And he was waiting to cash it, and he did what he was supposed to. He won the belt. He wants a say in who he fights so he can cash that check. Then do whatever the hell you want at that point.
Yeah, and let's not forget, this is a guy who Hendricks dropped out because he's sick or had an injury, I don't remember, and Woodley and his camp decide that they're evoking what they called no strap, no scrap. Mm-hmm. And so he sat out until there was a title shot.
Usually a terrible idea.
But it worked out for him, so he was rewarded for that. And so this is a guy who can sit out. He doesn't, like you said, he has nothing on paper. And I think when you lose that many champions, whatever.
Well, he fought Kevin Gastelum.
Yes.
He did that for them. He beat Dong Hyung Kim. He lost to Rory, obviously, a couple of years back. He's beaten guys like Condit and Koscheck, but he was never on the money side of any of these fights, maybe up until the Gastelum fight. But still, Gastelum was getting a lot of play in there and really didn't get a lot of criticism until he didn't make weight at that point.
Yeah,
so he's not been on the money side of a lot of these fights. I mean, obviously he got the KO of the night, Koscheck.
Yep.
But I mean, going into any of these fights, he's not been the money guy. So when you become the champion, I feel like if I worked my entire life the way that Tyron Woodley does, or like any Olympian does, and you get there and you finally cash in, quote unquote, you should be able to cash in, because Tyron wasn't on the money side of the Lawler fight either, folks. He won the belt.
Yep.
He won the belt. He got his win bonus. He got his performance of the night bonus, and I'm sure he got more than that. But this is the point where you go, hey, I'm champ now. You guys want to fight it out? Cool. I'm here. I worked my way here, and GSP wants to come back. Why wouldn't you, as the champion, expect the UFC to make that fight? There's nobody who can make an excuse for him not. Again, athletically, rankings-wise, all those things, I get what you're going to say about Wonderboy, and he deserves to be there. I think he just needed to wait one more fight, and we needed to do this with Tyron Woodley.
He deserves to be there, but to your point, the champion retired the champion and wants to come back and fight the current champion.
You make that, why? That's 100 times out of 100 you make that fight.
Yes, absolutely.
That's ridiculous. Are you telling me, I'll use an NFL example, are you telling me that if the first week of the NFL season pops up, and it's a rematch this year, the first week of the NFL season, we get a rematch of the Super Bowl, we get the Denver Broncos taking on the Panthers. So if you're telling me that Peyton Manning says, oh, I want to play, the NFL is going to do everything in their power to put a star back in there, whether or not he was any good in the Super Bowl or not, because that's where you make your money. That's where you get your rating. That's where you put your eyeballs. So you got the guy who retired with the belt. He retired with the belt and he wants to come back. And this isn't 10 years later. This isn't even 5 years later. This is essentially 2.5 years later. So it's not that far out from when he fought. And by the way, Dana White was on a podium saying, no, he's fighting again. So, hey, look, Dana White, he made a truth teller out of you. Not a lot of guys do that sometimes.
Right.
So you put him back in there. You put him back in there. This is ridiculous. I don't think Wonderboy Woodley is anywhere near a pay-per-view caliber main event. It, of course, is a championship main event. It's, of course, two fighters that deserve to be in that cage. But again, you've got to look a little bit at the business side. And if I ask 100 guys on the street that watch MMA who they want to see fight, if they're being truthful, you're going to get 90 out of 100 telling us they'd like to see that GSP Woodley fight first.
Of course they would. And I'm looking up right now the buy rate for 201.
Do we have it in yet?
I don't know. I'm just trying to see if...
I don't know if we have that in yet. So 201, it was fine, but that was on Lawler there.
I know, but I mean, even with Lawler, I don't think it was probably all that impressive.
Mm-hmm. Are you able to find it?
I'm not able to find it.
Yeah, I don't see it. Usually it takes a little while because they're... Now the W, they're still going to be a private company, so they still won't have to release those numbers.
I mean, the prelims did sixth best on Fox Sports 2,
mm-hmm.
which, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, their buy rate's not in yet, and that's usually been a couple guys work out some numbers and try to figure things out a couple different ways. So yeah. We'll see on that.
So there's that.
So you agree that they screwed up and they should have made the GSP.
I pseudo agree because they haven't signed anything yet.
Well, yeah, and you know what? This could all be negotiations. This could all be negotiations. But it seems a little public, and it seems a little strange. Like when dudes are releasing text messages about fighters that are willing to fight them, because usually we hear about guys, you know, somebody really leaks it that so and so didn't want to fight me. Oh, they didn't want the fight. They were ducking the fight. Like you got a fighter going, hey, I booked a fight. It's in my messages. You want to FaceTime him? We'll do the fight. It's just frustrating.
It is. But until something's signed, we don't know. And the bummer of this would be all of this thing. If it's just negotiations, the guy that loses the most is Wonder Boy, which is kind of terrible.
How about, see, I've got a fight. I don't know if he wants to pull that, what did you call it earlier? Strap or scrap me or whatever. What was it called?
No strap, no scrap.
I'll get it in my head.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants to pull that no strap, no scrap clause. Wouldn't you pay to see Wonder Boy Nick Diaz?
Sure.
You'd actually pay. See, you're giving heft to both of those fighters. If you put those two on the same card, you're going to do really well.
This is what I was going to say. You do exactly what they're doing at 204. I mean, there's three fights at 170 on 204, just in case, because
yes.
Dan Henderson's 300 years old, right?
Yes, 300.
And so you do the same thing. Your co-main event is Nick Diaz and Wonder Boy. Winner gets title shot whenever this is, right? If it's...
Yeah.
Whenever this
probably
is.
Probably 206, because 205 is probably...
It'll be this
Madison
year, though,
Square
right?
Garden, right? Yeah.
If it's this year, then winner gets the title shot at Super Bowl.
Okay. I don't know if you can turn around that quick.
How dare you?
Well, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I got to pull the cards out. I forgot there was a card this weekend, so I don't have them lined up for the next couple of months.
But there is a card this weekend. If you want to follow along with the results, you can do that on Twitter and on Facebook by searching WOW Show. Have a wonderful weekend. We will talk next week. It's Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.